Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
This is The Advertising Show. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth. The day you have waited for here is here. George Lois, part two of the interview we'll be doing with George here today on The Advertising Show, which is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. Also want to say hi to Jeremy Kent and look forward to his feature a little bit, well, in just a few minutes actually here. Our roving reporter, our global reporter, our man on the street. And it's not a United States street, okay? But he's actually not on the street, you know. In theory, he is. But it's good to have Jeremy here as well. Gene Bliss a little bit later on with Ray and Brad, and a lot of good things going on. Of course, George Lois, his bio is a single-page bio, but very succinctly written. As you would expect, it looks like two 60-second spots, maybe two 60s and a 10. And it includes a lot of really cool stuff, so we'll tell you about him in just a few minutes. A long time ago, we were involved in Tupperware, Brad. Tupperware. I hate Tupperware. Not the fact that it doesn't work good, because it does, and you can get it replaced, lifetime warranty, all that kind of garbage. But my God, it multiplies in the cabinet, what happens is they take their lids off, and then they all get messed up. It's terrible. But Tupperware is coming back with they're trying to show some serious things of how you can use Tupperware. Before the event, this is a Reggie Bush, who is the kitchenware company's chief executive. Basically, it's a, what is this? They've got some product placement there. They've got a show called Kitchen Aphrodisiac. And it's all about the quick chef with things that chop food, crank like a salad spinner, and are not just convenient for you and me, but also for those who are not comfortable in the kitchen. So Tupperware is, it's been a while since they've really done anything. You know, they got the house parties and such, but they're coming back with a much more up-to-date version of marketing for their product. And I'm sure it'll do well. You know, we've got a lot of competition out there. The El Cheapo stuff is there, and, you know, you can use it and throw it away when it breaks. But Tupperware still has a bit of a brand value, I think. But they're going to try some new ways to market it. So say hello to Tupperware again. Oy.
Well, and I'm sure you've seen Glad has come up with a bit of a disposable, you know, reused 2-3 times maybe type Tupperware.
Oh, yeah.
That's trademarked Tupperware. I'm not using that word generically.
No.
But I think I was smart and glad to come out with kind of a line, I'd say a brand extension rather than a line extension, but a great way. And I'm sure it encroached a little bit on those that might buy Tupperware or Tupperware-like products.
I like the Glad products, too. I think they're kind of cool. And they really, you know, obviously, they most of them come with food. Well, some of them come with food in it. You know, you buy some sandwich meat or something like that. So it's
and they're not meant to be used, you know, over and over and over like Tupperware. But you can get, I would imagine, safely 2, 3, 4, 5 uses and then throw it away and not feel bad about it because it's kind of built to be thrown away, right?
Exactly, exactly. We accept that, don't we? Throw most everything away these days. VCRs, of course, we threw those away already. DVDs, those will be gone soon. Let's see, what else? Our cars,
well,
possibly?
We're the advertising show, and my wife and I were just talking about this the other day because they were talking about all the trouble the United States Postal Service is having. How many times do you or your wife walk out to your mailbox and take the item that the mailman drove a vehicle from the post office to deliver to your mailbox that must have either flown or been on a larger vehicle to get to that post office, and you take it from your mailbox and you throw it immediately into the trash, and that goes fills the landfill. And I mean,
yeah,
talk about just a total waste of energy. But yet I haven't heard any of these mean green people talking about how, you know, trash mail is something that could be, you know,
it's huge.
A place Well, I mean, if you want to spam us on, on our web, and that way on our email, and that way we can just hit delete. Nobody loses.
Well, a lot of, based on personal experience, a lot of the stuff that we used to do via regular mail and won't get on Saturdays after a while here, if we do have regular mail, we switched over to online, with automatic withdrawals and payment online and such. It's a great idea. And we try and recycle a lot too. I wish we had a recycling program here at the office as well, but we don't. But in the meantime, do your best, and it makes a lot of sense. Hey, Jeremy Kent is with us here at the Advertising Show. Let us listen to this week's report.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Kent at the European News Desk. Coming up, the European regulator investigates Google after Microsoft complains, YouTube is under threat from changes to the UK's Digital Economy Bill, and a boom in online video advertising is being driven by TV budgets. Following formal complaints by price comparison website Chow and two other companies, the European Commission has opened an investigation to establish firstly if Google penalises potential competitors in its search rankings, and secondly, whether its dominant position in the European search market keeps advertising prices high. Chow was purchased by Microsoft in 2008, and its original complaint was brought before the German Competition Authority. Now the complaint, which centres on Google's practice of setting minimum bid levels in its advertising auction model, has been referred to the European Commission in Brussels. The two other complaints are from the UK price comparison site Foundam and the French legal search engine ejustice.fr. Both are vertical search engines themselves and claim that Google's algorithms leave their search rankings low because they are direct competitors to Google itself. Google denies that it is anti-competitive, and we can expect this investigation to rumble on for some time to come. Back to the UK, where the government is introducing a new law designed to protect copyright holders, but not without controversy all around. Individuals and some major internet companies claim that amendments to the Digital Economy Bill could see sites such as Google's YouTube forced offline. The change gives the British High Court the power to issue an injunction against a website accused of hosting substantial amounts of copyright-infringing material. Internet freedom campaigners say that this opens the door to a massive imbalance of power in favour of large copyright-holding companies, such as those in the media and music industries. The controversial amendment has been passed by the House of Lords, but has some way to go before it becomes law. There is a boom in online video ads, and it's being driven by TV budgets. The second biannual UK online video advertising market report shows that 40% of media buyers are using online video to deliver incremental reach to television. Right now, online video advertising is worth 3% of the UK TV ad market, and more than 50% say that they are maintaining existing budgets, whilst 13% are saying that they will actually increase their spend this year. As people change the way they watch their favourite programmes, advertisers are taking the opportunity to place commercials in front of highly targeted audiences. Interestingly, only 19% of the 135 media buyers surveyed said that click-through measurement was very important to their campaigns. This suggests that brand awareness is the primary focus. Right now, YouTube is the UK's largest online video platform, but it is coming under increased competition from rivals such as Seesaw and MSN Video. This is Jeremy Kent in London for The Advertising Show.
What a great new feature here with Ray and Brad at The Advertising Show. George Lois coming on in just a few moments. The legendary George Lois, the most creative, prolific advertising communicator of our time. This is his bio, folks, okay? Running his own agencies, he's renowned for dozens of marketing miracles that triggered innovative and populist changes in American and world culture, pioneering the creative revolution, popularizing the Xerox culture, prototyping the design for New York, MTV, VH1, Lean Cuisine, Tommy Hilfiger, ESPN, and it goes on and on and on. George is with us here in just a few moments. He has a brand new book coming out. If you have someone who loves art and things like that, it'd be a really great coffee table book. So when we come back, we've got George on the line here from New York, probably, with Ray and Brad on The Advertising Show.
We didn't create Rebus, the best advertising agency software application, overnight. It took us about 20 years of refinement, with the help of over 400 of our customers worldwide. From CRM estimating and timesheet entry to a full accounting package, Rebus Software is a fully integrated and user-friendly platform that will make your staff more efficient and your agency more profitable. And because Rebus is an energetic, multilingual, and multicultural company, we can respond quickly to your specific needs from the US to the UK, Spain, Italy, and Australia. Rebus, refined and proven effective by advertising agencies around the world. Want to find out how Rebus can work for your agency? Schedule a live online demo right now. Go to rebus-software.com rebus-software.com. The live online demo is free. The results go directly to your agency's bottom line. rebus-software.com.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth.
It's Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth once again back to welcome George Lois to The Advertising Show. You're going to love what's coming up here. I just happen to know that to be a fact. So, George, welcome back to the show.
Can we do this every week?
Sure.
Good.
Okay.
Well, we'll do it every other week just to mix it up a
every
little
other
bit.
Week.
But I tell you, Ray and I would love nothing more. And by the way, If our audience is not only wanting to go out and pick up a copy of the Esquire covers, MoMA, I would recommend, as I did and Ray did both many years ago after having George on the first time, go to Amazon and check out an old book that's out of publish now. It's a 1972 edition of George, Be Careful. I mean, talk about a classic. It was published by Saturday Review Press. And if you've been in business any time at all, what George went through, and he describes very articulately in that book, George, Be Careful, could be said about clients and things today if you're in this business. It just puts you back into what was going on back in the 60s when George was working both at Doyle Dane as well as his own agency. And I encourage you not only to check out that book, The Art of Advertising, as well as What's the Big Idea, some classic books from George and yesterday. But before that, George, you told Ray and I a story when we were talking about Edward R. Murrow.
I thought you were going to talk about the basketball court, but that's fine. Go with that, Edward R. That's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, well, we're going to. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and it had a George Clooney tie-in. And you may recall the movie I think it's, what was the, Good Luck and Good
Luck.
Good Night and Good Luck, yeah.
Right.
And which was a classic.
Which Edward R. Murrow is
Yeah. Tell the story about the FBI coming and talking to you.
Well, I was at CBS for a month or so, and I loved it. I was just young. I was just back from Korea. You know, I was 20, still 20, maybe I was just 21, and I loved working for Bill Golden, and I was doing a lot of stuff for Dr. Frank Stanton, who was the president of the company. You know, when he did a speech, I'd do it. And I got to know Dr. Stanton. And one day, maybe I'm there 4 or 5 weeks, I guess, and Bill Golden, who's my boss, you know, the great art director, comes to me and he says, don't worry, everything's all right, George. I said, what do you mean? Everything's okay. What happened, Bill? What do you mean? The FBI came in to visit Frank Stanton, Dr. Stanton. I said, yeah. And they basically was trying to get you fired. This was at the time. This was 1952, this in the middle of the 53, I guess, in the middle of the McCarthy period, you know, the terrible, terrible period in America. I mean, people think, you know, the 60s was terrible, the 70s terrible, this is terrible. I've got to tell you, the 50s was really terrible right after the war. When you sat down to talk, people would whisper at the dinner table, you know, at a restaurant. They didn't want to be overheard because somebody might hear something and they might get blacklisted. Mm-hmm. And indeed, many actors were blacklisted, and a lot of them were blacklisted at CBS. And anyway, they wanted me, and so I said, well, why? And they said, well, one of the reasons was that you were obviously a friend of Paul Robeson, and that he was a pen pal with you. You and he would write letters back and forth when you were in Korea. And I said, well, that's true. And they said, well, you know, Bill Paul Robeson, he's a, you know, he's a commie, he's a red, blah, 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 and a traitor. And then they had a couple of other things. I voted for somebody. Who knows what they said. And I said, well, what happened? And he said, and Dr. Stanton looked him in the eye and said, you're talking about George Lois, he's a Korean veteran. Get the hell out of my office. Which took a lot of nerve back then for the head of a network to say that to the FBI or to any official government, because they were under the gun, you know. In any case, a year and a half later or something like that, Edward R. Murrow is preparing what everybody knew was going to be a vital blow, hopefully, to McCarthyism, to Joe McCarthy, and doing a show on him. And everybody and in the movie Good Night and Good Luck, you know, which was produced, I think also produced by George Clooney. There's a scene in it where late at night, the night before the Edward R. Murrow show was going to run, they were seemingly debating whether the show should run. That they would stop it the night before, which was really wrong, because first of all that couldn't have happened, because you know you have affiliates et cetera that show how to go. What was happening that they were up there debating whether an ad should run the next morning. Two of them were at Times. I had designed both of them. They both were drawn by a blacklisted artist by the name of Ben Shahn, very important artist back in the 50s, and one of them was a drawing of McCarthy's face, which was nice and strong, etc. But the other one was I had him do a drawing of St. George, named after me, St. George. St. George was Edward R. Murrow on a horse, and he was slaying the dragon. And the dragon was Edward R. Murrow. It was Senator McCarthy.
Right.
A incredibly powerful image. I mean, frightening. When I told my boss Bill Golden I wanted him to Ben Shahn to draw it, he said, "George, that's incredibly powerful, but not in a million years would anybody. You can't run it." But anyway, Golden was going with it all the way, and it was upstairs, and they were trying to decide which ad to run. And Bill Golden was upstairs, and I was waiting to be able to call the Times up and say which one it would run. And Bill called up, and he said, "St. George wins," and we ran it, and that's the ad that ran. I ran it to George Clooney a year or so after that, and I told him that the scene was wrong, and in fact, Clooney heard it, and he said, "Oh my God, that would have been great," But it was like sweet revenge, against McCarthy and McCarthyism and everything he was trying to, and the way he was trying to, he was literally destroying the nation and making everybody hysterical with fear.
Don't mess with George here on the Advertising Show. Ray and Brad, and more of the interview we've got coming up here in just a moment. We hope you stay right here.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the
It's
USA.
Ray and Brad. You're sitting here with George Lois out of New York this weekend, part two of our interview. Hope you had a chance to catch part one as well. A Korean War veteran, George, we know that here in 2010 that you are not 40 years old. You're out playing basketball, and I really want to hear a little bit more about that story. It seems you had a little bit of a problem, huh?
Well, I don't understand it, but I've always had trouble all my life. I've had a lot of fistfights, I must admit. I guess I get pissed off easy. And to defend my attitude, I think if somebody is looking for a fight, I'm always ready, you know. I did mention to Brad when I was talking to him the other day on the phone when we were kibitzing, I'm almost 79 years old. I'm 78. I'll be 79 in June. I hadn't had a fist fight for many years, you know, like 2 or 3 years. I some 21-year-old kid, he's on the court, and I said, you know, and we were playing 3-man ball at the time, and I said, go down there, there's no empty court down there, you know, it's called court etiquette. And he said, who the fuck are you to tell me that, you know? And that's all I need, you know. Anyway, 22 guys are pulling me off him, and, I hate to act childish, but, boy, does rudeness infuriate me. I may sound like I'm rude, but I think I'm a gentleman. Right. But when I run into rude guys and when I run into rude manners, and I go nuts. And people look at me and they see this old fart, you know. I can still throw a pretty good punch.
Yeah, don't mess with George, okay? Just advice. Yeah. Let him have the damn court.
Yeah, and he still says, "Hey, what's the big idea?" Let's go back to advertising for a second, George. You know, we were talking off the air, and it really ties in with what you were just talking about before your basketball story, and that is, you know, how you have to do things in a way that get people's attention, whether it's the CBS ad for Edward R. Murrow or other ads that you did or covers for Esquire, whatever it might be. I want you to share with our audience, if you would, a little bit about the golden age of advertising, some of the ads that you were churning out back in those days, and more importantly, the underlying strategy that you would always integrate into all of the ads that you created, which is still valid today, and I think something that's missing from much of advertising that we see and hear these days.
Well, I was always a giant advocate of what I called the big idea. You know, we used to argue with Bill Birnbach, the great Bill Birnbach, and sometimes he'd say to me, "Well, do you like to say it that we just did?" I didn't do it, but somebody else did it. "Do you like to say it we just did for Al?" I say, "Oh, yeah, it's very good." He said, "What do you mean very good?" I said, "No, it's very terrific." "George, I know you. What's something wrong with it?" I said, "Well, yeah, it's good. What's wrong with it?" I said, "Well, it's not really a big idea." And I would kind of infuriate him sometimes. But I really think of, you know, a really big idea, you know, sears a product's unique virtues into a viewer's brains, you know, and it always results in a sales explosion. To me, you know, a big idea is what advertising is all about. You know, a big idea should be able to change popular culture. It should be able to transform our language. It should be able to, a big idea can start a business or save a business. The big idea can turn the world upside down. I tell everybody that everybody is. Does advertising that's unambitious, you know. I really think that, and I've said, and I really mean it, that creativity can solve almost any problem. The creative act is the defeat of habit by originality overcomes everything. I mean, I'm the firmest believer in creativity in the history of the world, and the way to approach anything creatively is to make sure that what you're after is an original idea that is totally surprising. I mean, I tell people in advertising, people who are trying to learn how to do advertising, the idea should be so surprising that it should seemingly shock people. And if you do something, you say, "Oh, that's a good idea," and you say, "Okay, now rethink this thing." If you show this to the world, will they be surprised? Will they be shocked? And they say, "I don't think so." I say, "Well, then start all over again." You know, I mean, and that goes for advertising, and it goes for the magazine covers that we were talking about. People would say, when they saw a magazine cover, for the first, when they were looking at the went to the newsstand, they would look at and they would remember the day where they were when they saw the cover. That it was such a shock to the system.
Wow.
And if you know, if I talk that way to advertising people, they look at me like I'm crazy, you know. And I tell you know, and the most important thing I say is that you should create advertising that's iconic rather than con. You know, and in order to create advertising that's iconic rather than con, it depends on your deep belief that your message is more than the purchase of a product or service. Mm-hmm. If you know, it should be more than just selling it. Obviously, it should be all about selling the product or the service, but it should be more than that. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the belief, you'll never create great advertising. You might create adequate advertising. That's why you can look at much of my advertising campaigns, many of them, and most of the Esquire covers, et cetera, they kind of blow you away. And a lot of them have been, people look at them and say, boy, that's an iconic image. You know, I mean, and you can't do that unless you seek to do that. You know, young people today think the advertising is, first, they're too embarrassed. They think they're embarrassed to ask for the sale. And two, they think they're doing little pieces of entertainment, little stories where you watch the commercial, and by the end of the commercial, you not only don't know what the hell they're talking about, you don't even know what the name of the product is, you know. So, you know, when people ask, what do I think about advertising today, nobody understands what I'm talking about. If they understand what I'm talking about, maybe they have a fighting chance to do some great stuff.
Yeah, makes sense.
You know, and then you've also said that the advertising, if it gets enculturated in the society and it's used by comedians or Johnny Carson or part of the fabric of society?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've done so many, you know, for instance, we were talking about the 60s. I mean, I did a campaign in the 60s, you know, for a stock book, the first stock book advertising in the history of advertising. I convinced the stock exchange to let me do it. It was a stock book by the name of Edwardson Handley, and I had Joe Louis, the great Joe Louis, come on, and back then everybody understood that Joe got screwed by the government because when he was in the army, he had fought many bouts, never made a penny on him. When Joe got out of the army, they charged him $4 or $5 million in taxes. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I had Joe come on in the 60s, and he looked at the camera and he said, I just want to say one thing. Edwardson Handley, where were you when I needed you? You know, you know, and you know, Edwardson Handley, the stockbroker you waited for. And Johnny Carson heard that on the air, and that night he started to say to people, where were you when I needed you? Everybody knew he was mimicking the commercial. Yeah. And then another commercial was Mickey Mantle saying, when he was still playing ball, when I first come up to the big leagues, I was a shuffling, ball player. But then I met a man down there, Wilson Handley. I'm learning. And Johnny Carson was saying to everybody, you know, out of context to the commercial, somebody would say something, he said, I'm learning. And everybody knew it was mimicking the commercials. And another commercial was a bunch of kids comes on the air, a little kid comes on the air and said, my daddy's a fireman. Another kid comes on the air and says, my daddy's an astronaut. The other kid said, my daddy works for Edwardson Handley. And then you heard the other kids go, wow. So Johnny Carson would say something to him and he'd go, wow. I mean, he picked up every line and repeated them. Wow. Everybody in the country was saying, you know, what's going on? Because the commercials were only running in New York. And then he found out about it. So what he did is he started to run almost every night. He started to run all our commercials so everybody in the country would see them. So everybody would understand why he picked the lines. The point is, you know, you can create advertising that really becomes part of the language and everybody says, gee, how about PR? A great ad campaign is a PR campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to make a phone call. You know, a great ad campaign gets picked up immediately and becomes famous incredibly fast. all my ad campaigns, I mean, I would spend one fiftieth of what most companies around do in advertising, and they would become famous in a couple of days. Tommy Hilfiger became famous, a famous name in one night, one day, mm-hmm. literally one day, you know, with one ad, you know. And you could create advertising miracles, and I've created many of them. I saved out, you know, MTV with the I Want My MTV campaign. ESPN was a Mickey Mouse network until a sports network until I did a campaign for them, et cetera, et cetera. The point is, you know, that you can do, advertising can create miracles and literally become an incredible part of the culture, an incredible part, and not only a part of the culture, but ahead of the culture, almost lead the culture. You know, when you talk that way to people today in advertising, they think you're nuts, but they don't have a clue as to what as the potential of it was. They don't even attempt it. The way I talk to people in magazine business about what you can do with covers, they all go, wow. But none of them are allowed to even try to do an idea cover. So they don't understand that covers could absolutely double or triple the circulation of your magazine by making the people understand, looking at the cover, that the magazine is hot shit magazine. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I don't know what I could add to that. You, Ray?
Well, I would say one thing. You've got artwork in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, a permanent display there. You've got the textbooks that are used in college courses, communications courses and such. What's next for you, George? Because I don't think that you sit still very long. What do you got plans for here?
Well, I'm working on right now. I'm doing ad campaigns all the time. You know, I'm doing an ad campaign for a restaurant down in Washington.
Sequoia restaurant, is it?
Yeah, it is. By the way, it's a terrific. I mean, I didn't know anything about it until I did a. I ran into the guy who owns all the restaurants, and he had heard who I was. And he said, "Gee, do you do logos?" And he showed me his logo. I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Do you like it?" I said, "No." He says, "Can you do me a logo?" I said, "Sure." So the name of his group is ARK, ARK Restaurants. So I did a logo where the hand of God, Michelangelo's hand of God, is pointing down to ARK. And there's words by the hand, which is obviously God talking, and God saying, eat. And you know what? If you showed that to 1,000 clients, you know, 999 of them would say, get out of here. Well, this guy looked at it, busted out laughing, and said, I love it, right? I said, that my kind of guy. And by the way, people who see the logo, when he sends a letter to people, et cetera, people just bust out laughing and say, hey, it's this warm, wonderful logo where God is saying, eat, you know, like a Jewish mother, you know. And this got to be a fun company, and their restaurants must be fun, you know. That's what a great logo should do. So anyway, so he, when I did the logo, he said, I have a terrific restaurant down in Washington. I'm really having a trouble because I really blah, 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 blah. So he said, could you come down and look at it? Yeah, okay, go down. It's beautiful, big, beautiful, beautiful restaurant. I say to him, what's Sequoia name? What's Sequoia named after the Indian chief or the trees? Or both, you know. And he said, no. He said, the Sequoia, maybe, but the Sequoia was named after, we named the restaurant after the legendary presidential yacht. And that hit me like a thunderstroke, because I remember when I was a kid that Roosevelt and Churchill, et cetera, were always on the Sequoia. So I did a campaign for him, and I let people know for the first time, really, that the restaurant had been named after the legendary yacht. And my campaign was, don't give up the ship. You know, and the first thing we did, one of the first things we did, is we came up. I came up with a Don't Give Up the Ship award, and every a couple of months or so, we're giving an award. And the first one was a full page ad in the Washington Post, and it says Sequoia proudly announces the first Don't Give Up the Ship award, and under it is a big Ford logo. And we gave an award to Ford, the only major American automaker to avoid bankruptcy and spurn a government bailout, you know. And, you know, because to me, by doing that kind of advertising, I'm saying, if there's a restaurant, if there's any restaurant in Sequoia, the name of the game, in Washington, the name of the game is Sequoia. You know, this is the Washington restaurant.
And in fact, can you imagine how much talk came as a result of that ad?
Oh, everybody went ape. In fact, I timed it to when Mulally, you know, their president, came down to Washington to talk at the Washington Auto Show. He gave the talk that morning, and he didn't know anything about the award. And in the audience was hundreds of people. You know, there were 1,000 people, but it was hundreds of people holding up the Washington Post with the ad, all congratulating him about the award. I mean, it was incredible. And last week, I ran a full page ad in the Washington Post, and there's two forks crossed, or like two dueling forks, right? Big, and the headline is an urgent appeal for bipartisan dining at Sequoia. And on one side it says, "Lunch or dine with your ex-wife, ex-partner, or senator or congressman from the opposing party." And on the other side it says, "What the hell with it? And just come with your sweetheart, family, friends, or business pals, right?"
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's great. So what's really wonderful about the ads is it's like the epitome of Washington, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I love doing advertising. I love doing things like this, you know? I mean, and above and beyond, you know, doing a terrific, continuing to do terrific advertising. You know, I'm working on TV specials and stuff that I can't tell you about, but if I nail it, I will call you guys and I'll talk to you about it.
Thank you for the scoop, and thanks for your time as well, George. Always a pleasure. Let's do this again soon, okay? Huh?
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow's fine. That'll be good. George Lois, thanks as always. You're a wonderful person.
Thanks, thank Brad. You. Thanks, Ray. Thank you both. I love you both.
Love you too, George. On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth back in just a moment with more.
Smart marketers are discovering a new and better way to get creative solutions. One company got solutions for a corporate identity program in less than 36 hours. The second got solutions for a public relations campaign that won 2 international creative awards. The third got solutions for a direct marketing campaign that got a 30% response rate. These marketers are finding creative solutions in a better way, the open ad way. You go to openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 creators. Within days, you get 20 or more creative solutions, and you pay only for the solutions you use. It's a radical new idea. You owe it to yourself to discover what it can mean to have creative solutions on demand. Find out now by going to openad.net, openad.net. Creative solutions on demand.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Button up your overcoat when the wind is free. Take good care of your coat.
Thanks once again to George Lois, our very special friend here at The Advertising Show. George, so many years, helped us out in so many ways, creating actually ads when we were in the process of creating a buzz about the program. And he was absolutely wonderful about saying, "Not a problem, I'll do that for you." It's a nice relationship, and we thank him for that. Alex Ben Block, who happens to be our guest next week, is also a good friend of The Advertising Show. The editor-at-large at, what is it, Hollywood Weekly, Hollywood Today, Brad?
Hollywood Reporter.
Hollywood Reporter. Hollywood something, okay? And he's a big guy there, and he's, the head cheese. We, you know what I'm saying. But we've got Alex next week here with Ray and Brad on The Advertising Show. Walmart is a very interesting store. I say, first of all, I love being frisked on the way out just in case I stole something. That's right. Always a pleasure. And having to show your receipt. But Walmart, in spite of that, has been shown as being one of the most valuable brands out there. They are topping Target and Best Buy. Those are the top three. Excuse me. But isn't that amazing that a store that can test your, at least my patience so well, is related as being, you know, kind of a safe harbor, a good brand, all that kind of good stuff. So, I don't know.
I got a confused elderly lady greeter, and she frisked me on the way in. Apparently, she had been doing the other job so long and got confused.
That could be a problem.
They stand on those pads. You ever stand on one of those and think, okay, is this supposed to somehow make it more comfortable?
No. It probably checks. It's probably a scanner. It checks you to see if there's anything down your pants, basically.
Take your shoes off before you pass through the door.
Exactly. And another thing on Walmart, too, they've brought back some products that you might have heard. Walmart dropped some brands and dropped some products out of their lineup just because they can do that. And as a result, they've lost some business to places like Lowe's and Home Depot and such. So they've brought back some of the brands that they've gotten rid of. I think that's rather interesting. So they're trying to do the best all the time. Hey, we've got Gene Bliss here on the Advertising Show. And what we're doing today is talking about the TD Bank. And this is a bank that it's a bank, but it's so much more, including a penny arcade inside. Listen to this.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome, with your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Ever tried taking your jar of change to a bank? Most banks require that you have an account before they take your money. And even if you have an account, there are numerous rules for how to wrap it, roll it, and label it. Bank fees, of course, apply to every roll. TD Bank wanted to get rid of all of that and simply help anybody, customer or not, who had a bunch of change to get rid of. So a penny arcade exists in every store. Feed it your change and receive instant gratification when the machine spits out a receipt, redeemable for cash, which you can put in your account or use to open up a new account. It's impossible to translate the impact of this one gesture on branch openings and growth. But in 2007, this service magnet attracted 5 million customers and non-customers into the bank to watch the show, experience the service, and possibly become a customer. Do you have a service magnet that pulls in customers and non-customers alike?
This has been your weekly installment of the Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
So with that said, what is your bank doing to really accommodate your wishes or even excite you about the opportunity of going to the bank, which not a lot of people do anymore, by the way. So that's a pretty good deal, and that's part of Gene's book. It's called I Love You More Than My Dog. Check it out, too. A lot of good stories in there, too. Brad, what are you holding there?
Well, I think this is pretty cool. Independent musicians who are accepted by YouTube's new Musicians Wanted feature could be able to quit their day jobs, Ray, if their music videos draw enough viewers through a new partnership program. Apparently, artists can make money when their YouTube videos are embedded on external sites. So YouTube looking at a way to help musicians through a new feature they're offering. And I think it could be a real cool add-on. They're getting a lot of musicians anyway on YouTube, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a great idea, too. There are so many of those folks who are out there. And we've used YouTube before to expose artists and such, just to, to take, I hate to say this word, focus group type things, and to take the temperature of people as far as music and such goes. But what a good idea. And that they're not alone. I mean, there are many, many other opportunities out there for young and upcoming artists to to get their music heard and to get their music played and used and then to get paid for it. I think it's a grand idea, so good for them. We have so much talent out there, and the record industry obviously forgot about most of them because they're so involved in all of the things that they've got to deal with, and they're only just an elite few acts out there that actually can take advantage of, the big places like the major labels and such. So good for them. I think it's a grand idea. And thus we wrap another show here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. I hope you enjoyed our conversation not only this week but last week as well with George Lois. And you're going to love what we find out from Alex Van Block, too, as we join him next week in conversation. Alex is in L.A. Love the show. Tell a friend about the Advertising Show. That's what happens. We're all over the place, too, on Twitter and Facebook, and would love for you to become a fan, too. So thanks to our participants as well, Jeremy Kent, and our brand-new sponsor, Rebus Software, as well, too. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production.